new audit just came out, and it looks at the Department of Veterans Affairs. And I wanted to talk about some of the key takeaways in this report. Joining me to talk more about this, and for the first time on the show, we have two of Connecticut's state auditors. We have John Garagosian, who is here, as well as Craig Miner. Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us on WICC.
Thanks for having us.
Glad to be here.
I want to ask kind of a general question, actually, first, because it's the first time I've had an auditor on this show. But what leads you to do an audit? So, for example, the Department of Veterans Affairs, was that something that came at the request from somebody? Is this something you have to do annually?
We're required to audit every state agency and quasi-public agency approximately every 2 years. So we're mandated by state statute. In addition, we do the federal audit, which applies to a lot of these agencies, especially the bigger ones that are federally funded. So the agencies go through quite a bit of scrutiny. And when we conduct our audits, we follow up on the past audit to make sure and to determine whether they've made corrections to the findings and recommendations from our last report.
And obviously, I'm not asking you to give all your secrets away, as you know, you guys are auditors, so this is part of your job, and you know, maybe you're not allowed to disclose all that information. But how do you go about an audit? I feel like it's a lot of numbers, it's a lot of record keeping. I would think it's a lot of people maybe you're connecting to. Maybe I'm wrong, but how do you attack an audit?
Well, there's a lot of information in each agency, a fair amount of spending, a fair amount of policy that has to be implemented, payroll. If you imagine everything that goes on, either forward in the case of veterans in providing services to veterans, or behind the scenes in terms of running an operation, all of those things are available to us. And there's a methodology to review all of it. We usually take a portion. So in the case of spending, we might take a small portion within certain parameters. And if there are no findings, there are no irregularities, then we move on to something else. But if you think about it, every facet of an agency has very similar operations. And so we can either choose to look at things or not choose to look at things. If there have been problems in the past, the way, as John said, then we go back there to see if they've been rectified, see if they've gotten worse, and so on.
So John and Craig are here. They're both Connecticut State Auditors, and there was a recent report that came out for the Department of Veterans Affairs. And I don't remember the exact report offhand. I had read it in a couple of different news articles. And so I'd rather kind of go to both of you. You did the report. You looked through the hours of work going into this. And so what were some key takeaways for you?
Well, to me, how an agency deals with its public policy is important. So in the case where Veterans Affairs, there seemed to be not good response times or responses at all with regard to reporting to the other nonprofits or legislative committees or commissions. Those things generally would disclose whether or not they had the right amount of staff in place, they provided the right amount of services on time, and so on. Many of the other things that are in the report deal more with what I call back office purchasing, time control, whether or not someone signed off on overtime before the person took overtime. As John and I talk about regularly, the audit says what the audit says, but as policy people, he and I both understand that these agencies have a larger responsibility. And so, is it wrong for someone not to get a sign-off prior to doing the overtime? Sure, but if you work for the Department of Corrections, they have to have a certain amount of people on the block, and so sometimes people end up with overtime without the right sign-off at the right point in time.
It does feel like, though, and again, we've got John and Craig here, it does feel like we're seeing more and more of these audits happening, and some of the... And a lot of them are state agencies. I know DEEP was another one that got a report done earlier this month. Overtime requests, and I would say reporting deficiencies or like a lack of reporting, I would say those are the two that seem to stand out, at least from a journalistic standpoint. I feel like that's been standing out a lot lately with the audits in, I'm going to say, at least the last year. I don't know if you agree.
Yeah, and you know, I would just say, you know, our audits measure against the state law, state policy, agency policy. So we're just measuring up against their rules. In certain cases, like Craig said, you know, the Department of Corrections is more interested in getting corrections officers to staff the facilities. As with the Department of Veterans Affairs, you know, they're taking care of disabled veterans, so they have to make sure there's nurses available. And often cases in these mission-driven agencies, that's their primary concern. We wanted to see improvement. Our mission is not to be gotcha. It's just to make sure that, hey, you got these rules because there's a chance of abuse. There's a chance of fraud by not documenting these things. And that's what a lot of these findings have to do with, like, you know, documenting and making sure that you dot all your I's and cross all your T's.
I mean, I know, again, just from just reporting the news, I feel like this month in particular, the other one besides the veterans and then DEEP, as I mentioned, I think another one was Office of Health Strategy. And again, I am wondering, you know, it's interesting you bring up kind of a shortage of work people, because you've got to imagine the two kind of go hand in hand. When you talk about overtime, you have to imagine it's because you've got staff that's being stretched thin, right? I mean, is that sort of what is being reflected in these audit reports, that we have a real shortage of state workers, you think? Or is it a combination of that plus kind of I'm going to call it an abuse of overtime?
So I'm new to this job. I think it'll be 2 years, maybe this spring. And when I started looking at these, they were right smack dab at the beginning of COVID. Since that time, people 22, 23, there were retirements. And so it's kind of been a double whammy in my estimation. Governments relaxed all the rules during COVID because you couldn't do the things you normally did. You couldn't sit in an office with someone and get a piece of paper signed. And so when I looked at those reports back during that period of time, in some cases, they're a little alarming. The longer they continue to show the same history, the same inaction in terms of correction, that's when I get a little more concerned about, or even a lot more concerned about, the fact that there should be people in place at this point, and they should have been changing the processes so we don't have these findings. So it's the time period of COVID, loss of employees. Now I don't know that we're up fully staffed in the state of Connecticut, but our agency is. And so I see these back office things lingering as being a problem. That's how I would put it.
And forgive me, only because we're doing this over the phone. Was that Craig talking or John?
Craig.
Okay. So, Craig, I think that's really interesting insight. And honestly, I appreciate the transparency from both of you. But I mean, I do think that is something that I feel like continuously comes up in, and all these audits are different, obviously, but that does feel like, you know, when you see the notes, and of course, I don't have the audit report right in front of me, so forgive me. But, you know, when you see the notes, that's like, hey, you know, we would recommend you do this, 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 and this. And there will usually kind of like an asterisk somewhere that says, you know, there's been no change prior to this audit report, or, you know, like, you know, if there were recommendations before, nothing had changed since then. And there's something to that effect. And I was wondering if you feel like there's either this attitude of, okay, well, you can do an audit and that's fine and it'll be news for 24 hours, but then we're going to move on with our lives. Like, do you think there's any of that kind of an attitude that, you know, the audits are obviously there and they're being reported on, but essentially there's no rush to take any of these recommendations and put them into place?
I think it's, the issue kind of described before. I talk about the Department of Correction all the time because You got to get corrections officers to staff the facilities. And maybe you didn't dot all the I's and cross all the T's as it relates to the approval of the overtime. Doesn't mean the overtime was illegitimate. But we're looking for improvement, right? So are there ways that can they automate the process a little bit more so that those approvals take place? I don't think it's nefarious. I think it's they're very mission driven. In this case, the Department of Veterans Affairs, if they need to have nurses, taking care of disabled veterans, and in 24/7 operations, your struggle is to get the coverage. Not only, and there's other state agencies that have absolutely no overtime, so it's not an issue for them. But I mean, it becomes an issue of a balance, right? You ask the question of whether they're adequately staffed. Well, if there's not enough staffing, it puts, I know in the case of the state, Connecticut State Police audit a couple years ago, we said they need more officers because there's a chance of officers getting hurt, the public getting hurt. If you're working, multiple 16-hour shifts, there's a balance you have to cover. However, in many cases, having extra employees costs more because of the fringe benefits. So in many cases, it's cheaper to pay overtime than it is to hire other, officers. And it's also a challenge. I know state police have had a problem recruiting and hiring officers because it's a long-term process.
So in the beginning, I talked about policy and how these agencies kind of all look forward. They look out to the public. They provide services. Doesn't matter which agency it is. That's how they operate. Department of Children and Families, we do audits on all of those agencies and look at whether they actually follow their policy and whether they follow state statute. And if you looked at that audit, you would find that there are some deficiencies there. And when we attended a joint hearing with the Committee on Governmental Oversight, I think we had a good conversation about that, in that if you have a certain amount of young people that run away, you have an obligation to make sure you find them. You have to be able to locate them. Policy, state policy and federal policy says you just can't not find them. And so those are the things that, as a human being, I think are more critical. Am I concerned about the accrual of overtime at a rate that might be more than it should be to someone? Absolutely. Most of those things can be fixed, usually with personnel. It does concern me, I guess, as a newcomer, that it may take many cycles to get some action. But if you look, and it's kind of complicated, most of the agencies agree with our finding and then say they're going to do better. And to John's point, you have to go back and see if they've actually done better. But to go back to DCF, Department of Corrections, their main mission is to make sure that they don't lose incarcerated people and that they take care of them. Mm. And the rest of this stuff is back office paperwork that probably should be better, should be done better. But the most expensive things in the state of Connecticut have been when an individual has been adjudicated to a corrections facility, has died in the facility, or has been lost to to the outside. Those are the things that are I would call really main missions, that if those are in the report, that's really a bad finding.
I'm curious too, and I don't know if Craig, both you and John have perspective on this, but I mean, we live in a world where I think everybody is just immediately looking for fraud, right? They're looking to see if their dollars are being used correctly, and obviously our taxes, and are we being duped? That is, the narrative I see in the news all the time, no matter where you live in the country. And I think that is the focus when money is so tight for the average person. So I do understand it to some degree. But I guess that's where I think this conversation is so important, because I believe that we are seeing more FOI requests. I think we're seeing more audit requests. And I think a big reason is because people want to make sure they're not being duped. Do you feel like that is what is happening? When you see reports like what has come out of the Office of Veterans Affairs, DEEP, Office of Health Strategy, DCF, you know, any of these. Is it more to what we have been talking about this entire time, or is there reason for people to be concerned about how their dollars are being spent to support these departments, these agencies in our state?
I say to people all the time, I think that a very, very small percentage of activity that we find would come under the category of fraud or abuse. I think there is some activity that we find that is a laxness, may not be good supervision, may be caused by turnover, could be any number of things. And then the bulk of what we find is good old-fashioned government working for the taxpayer. It's not by majority the other way around. I do think that some of the dollars that are lost through fraud, in fact, in the time that I've been here, there have been some payroll instances where people were paid beyond the period of time that they should have been paid. John and I would both, I know we agree, that could probably be handled by a change in software in CORE, which is the system that people get paid out of, where it just says you can only get paid out of this way one time a year. There was an employee that got paid, I think, for almost 2 years that way. So those kind of things aren't fraudulent by nature when they start, but when they continue for a period of time, I think most of your listeners, and I'll speak for myself, I think the fact that the employee didn't bring it to anybody's attention is probably where that line got crossed, even if they weren't arrested and just made restitution.
Go for it.
I say most of the fraud that occurred during the COVID era was external, generally. It was, the criminal element, and then obviously people falsifying their information. It wasn't state employees necessarily. It was external people, individuals and companies defrauding the government. And it was also, they can buy, the criminal element can buy, identities on the black web and submit hundreds or not thousands of claims under Social Security numbers that, you know, are all of our Social Security numbers that they have out there. That was the bulk of the fraud in related to COVID, in unemployment especially, but also in some of the COVID programs.
My last question is, when you have recommendations or you've identified deficiencies, does it require a follow-up on us, like within a certain amount of time for that agency, or is it just the required check-in that you guys already are obligated to do?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, we follow up on all of our findings and recommendations when we go in to do the next audit. But in the last year, the Government Oversight Committee that Craig mentioned put in a new requirement that agencies have to report to the committee and us on their major findings, I think within 6 months of release, and what their plan is to rectify, to address those findings and recommendations. So that law went into effect, I think, in October 1st. So we haven't seen any of these yet, but they're going to start coming as we're releasing these audits. You know, we talked about Veterans Affairs. Veterans Affairs is going to have to come to the committee and us and say, here's our plan for how we're going to address it, which is what we do anyway, except we're going to have that information a lot quicker than we would.
So we, our staff, I refer to it in its most simplistic form, call the balls and strikes. We don't set the parameters for the balls and strikes. That's kind of what they do. The legislature and the governor established the parameters. So they established the rules. And so we don't have the authority to change the rules. Our people can't change the rules. We just have to compare what the activities are against those rules. You made the point about, you know, you kind of get tired of looking at them. I've spoken with auditor. I'm the new guy. And so when I speak to the auditors, to be honest, they are a little surprised in some cases that it takes so long. And so it's really up to the legislature and the governor to make those changes. And to John's point, you know, John said if you can't meet the rules the way they are, change the rules. they may not be warranted anymore. There's a circumstance where people are only allowed to be out on paid administrative leave for a certain period of time. Well, if you can imagine when that statute was put into place, it probably took you about 90 days to go through the process, if that, for almost anything in the world. Now, you wouldn't even be brought to trial for 2 years. And so if there was a circumstance where someone outside of their workplace was accused and arrested for doing something and then ultimately was found not to have done it, and you fired them, now you've got a cause of action against the employer. So some of these things really are a matter of timing, and it's not a – we can't change it. All we can do is call it. And if the legislature wanted to have a conversation about that, I think, you know, we might be able to help them, but we can't really guide them into how they choose to change it either.
I think this perspective and insight is so fascinating, and I really appreciate you both giving us the time. Craig and John, thank you so much for what you do as state auditors here in our great state of Connecticut, and thank you for sharing this right here on WICC. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
All right. We're going to be right back. You're listening to Melissa in the Morning.